Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, May 2nd, 2022. To begin with, please know, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise hands or lower hands by pressing star 9. Everyone joining through video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. If you go under reactions and click on the raise hand icon, you can raise or lower your virtual hands. To begin with, all the participants are on mute. However, if you need to unmute to make some comments, that's how you would do it. As you probably know that we do have ASL interpreters with us on this call. So I would request everyone to state your name first and before you make comments. This helps the interpreters doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is at the time. Madam Chair, if you would, I would go ahead and read the agenda for today's meeting. Afterwards, I would take the roll call of the committee members.
Okay, proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. So to begin with, we have, as I just stated, after I finished reading the agenda, I will go ahead and take the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Madam Chair will go through the motion of approving today's agenda and prior meeting minutes, as well as the board report. There is an amendment on the agenda. We had a guest speaker who is unable to join the meeting due to schedule conflict. The topic of discussion with that guest speaker was floating bus stops. So we would have to table that until the next time. Our next topic of discussion is Metro Access face mask policy update. That would be provided by Mr. Christian Blake. We have a committee discussion on AAC bylaws work group. The committee will receive an update about the AAC recruitment process thus far. At 6:45, or as the time goes, we will have public comments, if any, and Tina Calabia will provide us with bus rail subcommittee report, followed by Metro Access subcommittee report by Paul Semmelford, and the meeting would adjourn by 7:30 p.m. That is the agenda for today's meeting. At this point, I would go ahead and take roll call of all the committee members present in this meeting. When I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
I'm here.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
I'm here.
Thank you. Melanie Henderson. Melanie has been out due to medical reasons. Steve Caffin has also informed that he is out because he's traveling. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Dr. Posner has informed that he would be joining a little later today. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semmelford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. And Kelly Simono.
Here.
Thank you. So that concludes the roster for today's meeting. I would also like to just remind everyone who would like to make any public comments. Initially, we would have 3 minutes for each speaker. 30 seconds before the time ends, we would alert you. At the end of 30 3 minutes, there would be a sound alerting you the end of the time. We are doing this practice to ensure that anyone who wants to speak and make some comments gets the opportunity. If we have any additional time, we would definitely come back and take more comments from any of the speakers. Madam Chair, at this time, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is Denise Rush. Thank you for attending the meeting. If we have some, well, I want to talk about the agenda. If we have some time, for the members who have done the wayfinding that are on the committee, we could hear some comments of what they think about wayfinding thus far, if we have time. But I would like, is that okay that we add that to the agenda?
Sure, Madam Chair. We looks like we may have time, and that would be a great topic to discuss and get the feedback from the members who have attended so far.
Okay. Well, I would like to get approval of the agenda with the amendment. Can I get a motion?
Second, Paul Summerford.
I couldn't hear you.
I seconded it.
Okay, the minute of the agenda has been approved with the amendments. Could I get a vote?
Aye.
Any nays? Any comments? Well, it's been approved. Now, has everyone read, I hope, the minutes from the previous meeting? I would like to get them approved also.
Move they be approved.
Second.
Thank you. I make a nomination to get the minutes of the previous meeting. The vote, please.
Yes.
Aye.
Those that approve?
Aye.
Any nays? The minutes for the previous meeting have been approved. Has everyone read the letter to the board of directors and want any changes? Can I get a motion to approve it?
Denise, this is Paul Silva. I would ask that we do it tentatively in respect to anything that comes up that may need to be added to it as from tonight's meeting.
Most certainly.
Okay.
But can I get approval of the draft thus far? A nomination to approve it?
Move to approve it as I previously stated.
With any additions from this meeting?
Can I get a second? Hello?
Marcy, second. There you go.
Okay, thank you. Marcy, you're very low to me, but I hear you.
Oh, okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay, could I get a vote to approve?
So, approve.
Aye.
Okay. It's been approved. Any disapprovals? Okay. Well, it's been approved. Okay. Next on the agenda. Anu?
Madam Chair, the first topic for discussion would be the Metro Access face mask policy update by Mr. Blake. And Mr. Blake is on the call.
Yes.
Hello, Mr. Blake.
Good evening, Madam Chair. How are you doing this evening and to everyone? Or this afternoon, I should say, it's still a little early. Am I on the camera yet?
No, sir.
There we go. Okay, I hope y'all can see me. Mm-hmm. I'm on the camera. I'm here on the camera.
Trying to see if Metrax's car is behind you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay, so during our last AAC meeting, which was the Metrax's subcommittee meeting, I was under one impression, yes, that earlier that day that the judge had made a decision. At the time of the meeting, we were going to hold tight with the policy of mandating face masks on Metro Access in alignment with our colleagues in Bus and Rail. Later that evening, based on further clarification from the Transportation Safety Association, but just in general, there was a lot more clarification from the administration, let's just put it that way, the federal administration. So now face masks are not required on Metro Access. So that's the official policy. Face masks are not required by customers or drivers on Metro Access. However, Metro Access, through communication with our contractors, are strongly encouraging drivers to continue to wear their face masks, and through communication, both IVR messaging and now confirmation at the end of the confirmation of a reservation call, we're encouraging customers to continue to wear face masks when they ride Metro Access. And in addition, Metro Access is strongly promoting our ventilation strategy and encouraging the drivers to keep the windows open to the extent that the customers can tolerate if they're in the back, as well as utilizing the air conditioning unit for heat when it was colder outside and for cool air, but to continuously blow air into the vehicle. And I was happy to say I saw the first two drop-offs at our new office today. Two Metro Access vehicles came by and their windows were open, and that was pleasing, and drivers did have on their face masks. One customer did not, and that was their decision. Again, we cannot force a policy or enforce a policy or mandate a policy that has been deemed unconstitutional by a U.S. court. So again, the policy now is face masks are not required, but Metro Access is encouraging customers and drivers to still wear face masks on our vehicles. So I'm available for any questions.
I guess I need to put my hands up.
Yeah, I don't see any hands, but I see Tino's hands. So let's start with Tino, then I'll come to you, I'll come to you, Paul. You're on mute, Tina.
You're still on mute, Tina.
So do you want to go to Paul first and then we'll come back to Tina? That's okay. Thank you, Tina. We'll go to Paul first.
So I do want to say that the Metro Access staff has been very good at, listening, to our suggestions and making sure customers are well informed of this, change in policy with face masks. I can see from the vehicles, they have stripped all the signage about face masks were required very quickly and aggressively, I saw. And the other things have been updated, with the agents and with reservationists. Now, the drivers did get noticed. Some of them most have told me that they were strongly encouraged to still wear their masks, and most of them continue to do so. And so that is in effect. Now, I did try, just to play on devil's advocate, with one trip not to have my face mask on, and I got a little scuff from a driver, and I, put it on just to, I guess, behave. But I'm just suggesting out there that there may be a few drivers, even though they know the policy's out there, they are still concerned about their safety own concerns in still trying, like, do you have a face mask? I'm worried about my family and all this. I know this policy is in place. So I'm just putting it out there that there are, some talk about, yeah, it's out there, but, you know, why is this person doing this? And I said, I'm just letting you know it's out there. So that there, you might hear some scuttles from customers who try to do it and might gotten some, you know, I mean, they ultimately can't rebuke them from using it, but still, I'm just putting it, initially, you might hear some of that out there because I've tested it.
Well, as you know, Paul, I think I've been as transparent as a Metro team member can be with the AAC, as you've probably experienced over the years. So I'll continue to be transparent. And yes, we've already run into that. And Sunday afternoon, Ms. Anderson was kind enough to send out a reminder notification to all of the service delivery providers to remind their drivers that, yes, we all recognize how serious this situation and this pandemic and this particular virus is, but it is not their job to confront our customers. It is not their job to attempt to deny customer transportation as a result of their decision, as the customer's decision, not to wear a face mask. So yes, we've had to face this situation already. Each company reiterated that message to their drivers. And so hopefully any further conflicts will be few, if any, and very far between. But I appreciate you verifying what we have heard as well and have experienced. And I would encourage you, as I'm sure you don't need any encouragement.
Of course, I wear my face mask, but I just like test every once in a while.
I was going to say. Yeah. I want you to continue to every so often so that you don't become the one person doing it and therefore get a name around all the bases. But I would appreciate you testing every so often just to see what the reaction will be.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Tino, you're off. Yeah.
Thanks, Christian. I haven't been on a Metro bus since the requirement for masks, the requirement was suspended. I have been on Montgomery County ride-on buses, and I'm happy to say that the drivers, at least the ones that I've seen, have been wearing their masks, and maybe more than half of the passengers also have been wearing theirs. Tomorrow I have to go on Metro Rail in order to go down and look at the fare boxes. Has anybody had any observations of mask wearing on Metro Rail and separately on Metro buses?
Well, while we wait for other members of your committee to answer you, I can just quickly give you my firsthand experience over the last few work days, business days, because as you know, we are in a new building that you all will be invited to very soon. And so now my commute is from Union Station on the Red Line to the blue-yellow line towards Huntington, the green-yellow line towards Huntington. And what I've been experiencing is that, and this is purely unscientific, but I would say about 70% of customers I've seen have had masks on, and I would say about 30% have not. And generally speaking, I would say the numbers in terms of higher versus lower correlate with age demographics. The younger the passengers, the less I see of masks. The older of the passengers, the more I see masks being worn. Okay. That's been my observation. I know, Carol, I see you're on camera. You've been out in the field a lot as well.
Yes. If somebody can address the situation on Metro buses, I appreciate what you said about Metro Rail, and I'll certainly feel comfortable knowing that up to 70% of the passengers are. But on Metro buses, does anybody have any observations of how mask wearing is now?
Tino, unfortunately, I've not been riding Metrobus, but I can echo what Mr. Blake was saying about the demographics and who wears the masks and who doesn't.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, thank you.
Thank you, Carol and Tino.
If anything, one thing I realized, this question tells me I need to get on the bus a few more times. I haven't been on the bus in a while myself, so maybe I need to just venture out and get on a bus every so often. Make sure I keep up what's happening on that mode as well.
This is Anu. Barbara Melville just wrote a chat message saying that her experience is 1/3 on rail wearing masks.
1/3?
Yes.
Wearing masks.
1/3, yeah. Wearing masks?
That's Barbara's feedback.
Interesting. Okay. So that's like just the opposite. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Okay. Anyone else who has any questions or comments regarding this as it relates to this topic before we move on?
Yes. If I can add again, you know, our chair, Phil Posner, has said before that people should be encouraged to wear it. And then in the Washington Post interview, a long interview, he mentions again that while we can't announce that people must, he suggested that we could at least say that people are encouraged. I don't know how that would work out. Do we say that? Do we get announcements over the rail audio system to say that, or do any of the signs in the metro stations, is it possible for them to say that in keeping with what Phil has suggested, that people be encouraged?
Tino, this is Ms. Rush. I don't think that's appropriate. They've already said the mask mandate has been lifted, and the people know that, and to have those signs is going against what the mask mandate says. We, as users of Metro Access and the bus rail, can encourage it when we're discussing it or talking with someone, but I don't think you can put up the signs saying we encourage it. Am I correct, Mr. Blake?
Hey, Denise, I think this is Pat. I think
yes.
I remember hearing on Metro Access last week when I put that they encourage it, and they're also sit, you know, 6 feet back from the driver and all that kind of the same.
They did. Yes, so but he's
talking about fixed rail service. So I will say this. We have a bus and rail subcommittee meeting next week. I think some of this will be cleared up. Whereas fixed route, you put signage up, it becomes a challenge because it almost looks policy driven. It almost looks, even the word encourage, someone can take that and run with it. Some customers, whereas fixed route is kind of self-enforced, if you will, and trust in the customers. The difference and the reason why Metro Access can say we encourage it is our relationship with the customers as a door-to-door service. We're engaging with the in a what they call on-demand service. We're engaging with the individual customer. And that communication is largely one-on-one between the reservationist and the customer, and then one-on-one between the customer and the driver. Signs for fixed route services really go to a broad range of individuals. And I think it just becomes a challenge, which is probably why you haven't seen any signs or even displays on our electronic display systems. By Monday, I will have more clarification as to how Metro will, if we will, follow that encouraging language on the fixed route side. So far, I'm not aware of our practice in going in that direction, but I will find out more by next Monday. But again, with Metro Access, given our direct relationship with the customer, again, door-to-door service, on-demand service, we have a little more flexibility with regard to that. But as you may or may not, well, you don't ride Metro Access, I don't believe, Tina, but as customers may or may not notice, we haven't put signs up on our vehicles that say we encourage. All of our communication has been through the reservationist and through our IVR. So that's a little more flexibility we have. On the fixed route side, it's probably a bit more challenging, but I will find out more information for this committee by Monday.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Mr. Blake. I saw that on Metro Access, and that there was no issue at all.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
This is Zanu. Madam Chair, I just wanted to add a little bit more information from Barbara Melville when she was referring to the mask-wearing riders. That was her experience on orange and blue lines. We also have another member of the public, Azar Atura, saying that yellow line trains are quite crowded during AM and PM rush hours. Some masks, then there are the school kids running around AM and PM. And then the additional comments are, and PS, the heavy smell of weed being smoked usually at either end of the station, doesn't matter which station. Thank you for sharing your feedback. Okay, that was the end of the comments that I was reading.
We must note that DC is getting ready, you know, DC, Maryland, and Virginia, a lot of the states are saying that you can purchase weed, and people are going to be getting on the bus and rail where they have come from home with weed in their hair, on their clothes. It is absolutely horrible. I don't know, but we're going to have to note that that's going to be pretty much the normal pretty soon, unfortunately. Because if you don't smoke, it's annoying. And if you have a breathing problem or anything, that is a problem. Because it's on every corner, it's everywhere. And I don't think there's anything you can do about it but wear a mask at all times to help you breathe. Any comments?
This is Zanu. If anyone has any additional comments, please let us know now.
I agree with her, that's for sure. And as you all know, I consider people with disabilities just like anybody else. And so there'll be people who currently are and maybe in the future do more because the changing legal winds. So that's in addition to the wearing the mask, perhaps even beyond the pandemic. Again, we're going to always, I think, continue to focus on ventilation. Rather, we're in a pandemic and trying to avoid a virus or the I hate to say, I don't want to offend anybody, but the annoying scent of cigarettes or marijuana going forward. So I know on my mystery rides, if you will, I'm going to continue to request ventilation just for the sake of all of the above. But I hear you, Ms. Rush, and I totally agree with you, both on the fixed route side as well as the paratransit side. The scent of marijuana, I don't want to pass judgment, but it's something we're going to have to become come to grips with. But I will say this, if you ever if you ever catch that scent on a Metro Access driver, I know y'all gonna make sure you let me know as soon as possible. And you probably wouldn't want to ride on that vehicle at that time. You want to report it instead. So we're talking just customers, just for the record.
Okay, Mr. Blake, your face is kind of
fading away behind the cars. Just letting you know.
Mr. Blake, you're on mute if you're speaking.
That's the way he likes it.
Is that a little better?
Yeah.
Much better.
Much better. Okay, thank you. Okay, sorry about that.
Tina, I see your hand is up. Did you want to make any comments or is it up from before? Okay, I take it as up from before. Thank you. I can lower it if you need. Okay, Madam Chair, at this point, would you like to move forward at the next topic, which is the AAC Bylaws Work Group?
Okay, so we're going to develop a work group for the bylaws again, like we did before.
I believe that was a discussion the committee was having last meeting, and it was recommended to discuss it during this meeting to discuss the work group for the bylaws. Yes.
Can I ask a quick question? This is your meeting, this is your committee, it's your bylaws, so please don't be influenced by me at all. And I'm not comparing the AAC bylaws to the U.S. Constitution, but changing the bylaws every 2 or 3 years becomes somewhat kind of questionable. So I want you all to please have a robust discussion on this concept, but please, in terms of your discussion and your proposal to move forward, perhaps with a committee and another revamp of the bylaws, please be prepared to explain among yourselves and then later to staff the absolute pertinent need to change bylaws this soon after we recently changed them less than 2 or 3 years ago. That's just something to keep in mind so that we as staff can then explain to our colleagues who will then have to take any changes through the board process and approval document process as to what brought about a need of changing the bylaws yet ago, or amending the bylaws so soon after the last round. Thank you.
Pat Sheehan.
Patrick, well, first of all, I need to be brought up that we haven't changed the bylaws in just a couple of years. But I also want to note that everything in the bylaws doesn't need to be changed. This is a suggestion. We can highlight what we think needs to be addressed and changed or discussed. But could someone refresh me on when we last changed the bylaws?
Yeah, Mr. Blake, the
last bylaws was when I was chair, and that was long before, because I don't think we made no changes 2 or 3 years ago. Because if you look at the last bylaws, it was well before that when I chaired it, and it took a long process to put those changes through legal.
So you think that, Paul, this is Pat, perhaps we didn't get the changes approved until maybe 3 years ago? But I know
if you look at
the last bylaws, the changes were made well before 2 to 3 years. So I wanted to find out from Mr. Blake what changes were made 2 to 3 years ago, because I don't see that on the last date that's stamped on it.
So let me ask this question, though, first of all, because this might be relevant. Right now, we're holding virtual meetings. I don't believe that the bylaws were crafted to be able to hold virtual meetings, and we may end up having hybrid meetings in the future with some present in the room, others on Zoom. Plus, where all of our voting is done remotely, as opposed to, and it's been so long, Paul, since I've read them, technical changes like that might be useful. I don't know, but I'd have to really reread them to see how prescriptive we are allowed ourselves to be with respect to in-person versus hybrid, you know, virtual versus hybrid versus voting and things like that. But I one thing I would say, you guys know me, I certainly wouldn't want to see the clock reset with any updates to the bylaws.
Thank you, Patrick. This is Tino. I'm sorry, this is Anil. And I see Darnese Bush has her hand up, followed by Tino Calabia. Darnese, go ahead.
Basically, you answered my question that it's my understanding that we would be reviewing the bylaws and changing only segments that needed to be changed. And my other question is, well, that's not really, my other statement is, I agree with Pat, it should be hybrid because it's going to take a while just for people to review and just send in their comments. So will it be virtual? And is there a time frame to complete the review?
This is Patrick again. When I was talking about not how a committee would work to the bylaws, I was talking about the structure of our overall meetings. I believe that when this was first, when this was set up, the last time we reviewed it, we didn't even have Zoom. We didn't have virtual meetings or hybrid meetings or anything. So I don't believe the bylaws have any reference that really allows us to do that. So I think putting that in, let's say, as an update, updating the minutes to reflect that a hybrid or virtual meetings, you know, are allowable is one thing. And then the other thing that I just don't know, and I've been going through this with other organizations, which is why I bring it up. When we're voting there, we used to always vote by raising hands. Well, now we're voting in a hybrid. I mean, we're voting in a different way. And is that allowable in our bylaws? So we might have to update it just to reflect a hybrid or virtual type meeting. That was my thinking. Now, how the committee gets structured, that's also a very good question.
And just for everyone's edification, I just looked at the bylaws. The last update that was done to it was April 23rd, 2015.
Correct. You just beat me to it. So I do stand corrected on the three years. I guess what happens, my time here has been so much fun. It just seems like everything has just been the last.
That's okay. It's just the fact that you said last couple of years, and I'm like, it says every 5 years, and I'm the one who's the chair the last time, so I should know this. It was April 5th, so after it went through legal and everything, which did take a good while, at least I think almost a year or so, it was April 23rd, 2015, was finally adopted. So we are in that five-year stage, which, yes, we do, if the committee wants to do so, AAC wants to make any changes to reflect the times as they're having this discussion now, and I'll be quiet.
No, and I agree with that. And I mean, I think Patrick, as well as Paul, I think you all have made a case for at least a review, if nothing else. But I think you made your case. I kind of I get where you're going. And then when I just looked at the older files, I did see we started that work in 2014 and the board passed the resolution in 2015, which was 7 years ago, not two or three, but it just seems like yesterday. That's just how much fun I'm having. So I stand corrected on the timeline, and I'll pass this on to Anu and Carol since they're in ADAP now and I'm not. But no, I'll be here to help and make sure.
I remember doing this with B. This was a fun project, and I look forward to it was someone fun. Else.
Mm-hmm. I see Mr. Colbert on the night. I don't know if Dr. B's on to testify how much fun it was, but no, we'll work together with it. You all lead it. These are your bylaws, and the staff will help facilitate the process.
Okay, Tino, you have a question?
Uh,
Gino?
Yes. No, I was just going to add that I've been on a little over 4 years, and I don't remember ever having been involved in a meeting in which the bylaws came up. So
well,
what Paul says confirms my experience that this took place before I ever became a member. The second thing is that, you know, after the pandemic started and we began having Zoom meetings, early on, I think we observed how having Zoom meetings encouraged more participation, and certainly more members of the public joined us. So I thought at some point somebody mentioned it, of our regular 3 meetings a month, maybe 1 or 2 of those meetings could remain on Zoom. And I think that would be a matter for bylaws change. And that's about the only thing that I can think of that would need bylaws change. I have gone through the bylaws and I don't remember anything beyond this idea of having 2 or at least 1 of the 3 monthly meetings on Zoom. Thank you.
Well, as I previously asked someone to make me remember when the last revision was, but now that they've brought it up, I remember Mrs. Bellamy was still alive, and we were stuck on the 5-minute arrival time. And then we had a few things that we hadn't agreed on or gone through to our satisfaction. And then it was not printed. It was put on the where we couldn't, never did talk about it. It was just put on the, I don't know what word to use, but it was put up, and we never really approved. We said, you know, it's on there, and if you want any changes, you can write in and we can discuss it or something. Paul, what happened at the end?
We're talking about what? We're talking about the bylaws, or are we talking about
The revisions. We were asking when were people going to receive. We never got a printout. We used to get a printout of the bylaws, correctly?
Well,
am I correct?
Yes, but with the bylaws is a little bit different. Our bylaws for the AAC is that it has to go through whatever final draft that I guess we agreed on. It went through legal, and technically with legal, if they needed to make any changes as they see fit, they did.
And I stand corrected. It wasn't the bylaws, but the Metro Access Manual is what I'm talking about. That's what it is. Yeah, the manual, we used to get printouts, and we don't get printouts. So I'm getting confused between the bylaws and the printouts.
But we can discuss that separate issue
at the Metro Access meeting if you want to do that.
Okay. That was the customer.
The customer guy.
Yeah, we had a printout of on the. We do get a printout, and only we get the bylaws, and then the bylaws. But we have not reviewed it or changed them in 7 years, mm-hmm. So. My suggestion, I guess, as leaders, Paul, we go over it.
This is with the bylaws, right?
Yes, we go and highlight what issue we want to change or something that we want to add. And I do agree with Pat that we need to. At the usage of not being together, but voting and that procedure, you know, not in person, or it should be noted that voting on this issue can be virtual or non-virtual. That should be.
Go ahead. Sorry, I was going to add
one more another comment, a thought for everybody. Now, given the fact that we've been doing Zoom and we will return if, you know, when and if it's safe to return in person, the consideration possibly, you know, if we can still participate, if it's possible, like y'all talked about hybrid fashion, can some of us still participate if we can't show up in person via Zoom, or can it be managed that way? Of course, that would be something we have to ask staff if that can be done, as this is now, you know, we're looking towards the future. Can we, I know in the past there was, you know, some thought about participation for those who are not able to make the meeting. Is there a capacity where those who feel comfortable can return in person and prefer face-to-face, and those who still prefer hybrid for a variety of, I mean, going, not hybrid, but going virtual, can both be married into one in the same meeting and we all can participate that way. But that's something we would need to explore with ADAP staff, if that's a possibility for future meetings, when we look at what hybrid might look like, if we can accomplish that with these AAC and subcommittee meetings.
Okay, so also when we're on the meeting and those who are on the phone can't at that time vote or send in something to a new that they vote yes or they vote no.
Mm-hmm. And certainly we
while we are on the phone.
Madam yeah. Chair, this is
yes.
So there is a capability of raising hands, even for people who join through phone calls. And
yes.
I believe that might be the easiest way of doing something virtually. I believe you're talking about voting, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, this is just a suggestion. Yeah. When we have topics that, even if, you know, this might be something that we want to do in general, when we have things that we need to vote on, you just press it and raise your hand. And you can see it and mm-hmm. know that Ms. Rush said yes.
Yes, and just to share, this is a feature which we have not utilized, perhaps because there was not a need to do so far, but we could create polls. Those could be created ahead of the time. If we already have a questionnaire, so to speak, we could create polls based on those questions so that anyone joining, any of the members participating in the meeting can give their votes accordingly. So that feature is there. It does exist for us.
All right, well, anyone else have any comments?
I have one final comment that I can ask Mr. Blank.
Okay.
Probably be the final comment. So Mr. Blank, because I've missed the wonderful Metro sandwiches over the last couple of years, I'm wondering if they can be delivered. If we. Just, it might be the last comment.
Let's see if there's any room in the budget for that. That was a very high level line item in the budget.
All right, sir. Thank you for considering that.
But on a more serious note,
Mr. Blake, is it feasible, as we're discussing possible changes, is it feasible to hold meetings in the future if it's possible in hybrid, where some members are able to physically attend because they choose to do so, and others participate virtually? Is that somehow possible as we're looking
well, at it? Well, it certainly is going to be possible to an extent. Now, we have to get, we're just moving into the new building. I haven't even gone inside of the boardroom or the public meeting room to see the technology there to ensure that a person who's participating online has somewhat of the similar experience of a person who's actually at the building. But anything is possible. And I think after the pandemic, the virtual participation in meetings is here for good now. I don't think this is going to go away. And it would be, I think, difficult for Metro to even try to take it away at this stage. We'll see what transpires moving forward. But I highly anticipate Zoom being a part of the AAC from here on out, or some, doesn't necessarily have to be Zoom, but some form of meeting technology such as this being part of the AAC from here on out. How does that relate to a member participating? You would think it's not that difficult or challenging, but let's see. Let's find out moving forward. As you all recall, we were actually doing this before the pandemic. We were doing the audio. I don't think we were doing video at the time, but we were doing audio, broadcasting our AAC meetings all around the world, as I would say, before each meeting. So we're not new to this, but in terms of, and members could participate to a certain extent remotely, but now we want to be able to have that real-time member participation, including voting. Well, my attitude is if Congress can do it, I don't know why the AAC can't.
The only reason I say that is when I went to the public hearings in person this year, they were able to do things in a hybrid format, and I'm wondering if some of what they did, which they were encompassing, you know, both people coming in person, the few that did, a lot of the people that were able to Zoom in, can that same concept be worked with us going forward in the future for meetings when there is, discussion how we do hybrid, because obviously we would need to reflect that in the and revising the bylaws to reflect that and how participation looks like, and how's that going to be all ironed out?
We're going to work with you, and by the time this round of bylaw reviews is completed, we should know where we stand by then.
All right, because I'm sure y'all would have your some basic technical guidelines on how to shift that together. We would like to hear that at some point I know you still probably have that in the works, but at least I'm seeing what I saw from the public hearings. I was alluding that maybe something similar to what is being done, but a little bit more coordinated.
We'll work with you. Yes, sir.
Okay, so at the end of the day, are we going to just think about it and bring it up at the next meeting, or we want to make a motion about the bylaws?
My suggestion, Denise, is you would need to nominate or find somebody, not me, to help spearhead or facilitate this process in terms of a work group or the process itself, like Dr. Well, B did last time, or, you know, that would be one suggestion, or however you want to choose to do it with the AAC.
Well, I think experience is great, and you have experienced it before.
Oh, Lord.
And we all have our specialties, and that is your specialty. Oh, what do you think, Pat? Hello? Patrick?
All right, go ahead. I was getting another message in my hearing aids.
Okay. Well, Paul says he suggested we get someone to spearhead the bylaws, and he said not him. And I said, well, I think experience is nothing like an experienced person, and I suggest Paul or Pat.
Oh, I think I absolutely agree with you. I think Paul is perfect. and if Paul's the lead, I'll be the sub lead.
Okay, well there we are, Pat.
And we'll draft Phil also, since he's not here to object about that. That'll teach him.
Okay, we have Pat and we have Paul and we have Phil, all P's, the three P's.
Three P's.
Okay. Madam Chair, this is, I know Donnie's Bush has her hand up. Ms. Bush, go ahead.
I just wanted to make a recommendation that in terms of having separate meetings, that we just meet, we just take part of the AAC meeting at the beginning of the month, like at least a half hour to go over the bylaws. And that way the three P's could get help from the rest of the experienced group for comment.
Oh, well, that's good. But first, we need a motion to nominate the three P's to address the bylaws. So can I get a nomination?
This is Philippa. I nominate the three P's, Paul, Phil, and Pat, to look at, revise, and become the lead on any amendments to be made to the bylaws.
Second.
Can I get a second?
Second, Darnese.
Thank you. Can we vote on that nomination?
Yes, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Paul, I think we're all voted.
Okay, so it has been approved, accepted. Do we have any nays?
I was going to abstain, but that's not going to do anything.
Yeah, I think you're outvoted, Paul.
And we thank
you. Well, thank you. And I know we will get from the experience that we've had previously. And we just want to highlight the areas that really need some change or attention and some additions.
I think it's also not.
Excuse me?
No, go ahead. Finish. I'm sorry.
I don't think it's too. It's not going to be as painful as previously.
Okay.
Well, thank you for that nomination, and everybody agrees. And I want to also make a nomination that a motion that the suggestion that Darnese said that.
Sorry, I didn't recognize your command.
In the beginning.
9:00 a.m. The alarm is off.
I'm sorry, my Moshi is talking. We want to mention at the beginning of the meeting or at the end of the AAC meeting areas that need to be discussed amongst everyone is a good suggestion to ease the pain some.
Thank you.
Get a motion?
So moved, Darnese.
Second, Philippa.
Okay. Can we vote?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Well, I think it is approved. We have anybody who objects? Then it's been approved. Thank you. Anu, what's the next topic?
So the next topic, Madam Chair, is the AAC recruitment. And Paul had requested update about that. So that is the topic next.
So Blake is going to talk about that? Or you?
Mr. Blake, would you like to?
I'll defer to you, Ms. Sharma. I'm letting you take the lead on this one.
Okay.
I'm going to pull a Denise Rush on you on this one.
No problem. I'll be happy to share the update. So with the upcoming, with the vacant positions, we have one vacant position from Washington, D.C. One renewal is coming up. And we have one vacant position from Montgomery County in Maryland and three positions in Virginia. So far, we have received two potential candidate applications from Washington, D.C. We have three applications from different areas within Virginia. And I have been receiving emails and phone calls from other potential candidates who are either going to send their application via email or via mail in the next few days. So we are going to be receiving more applications. The deadline for submission for the AAC application is Friday of next week, May 13th, 2022. Once we have received all the applications after May 13th, we would review those and the further process will take place.
So that we haven't received have we received any applications from Montgomery County or Maryland?
As of yet, no, but I have been in communication with the potential candidates and I believe we should be receiving them soon.
Well, I think that's some encouragement. It's more than we have been receiving, correct?
Yes. We have received quite a bit of interest this year, which is very encouraging. And it's good to know that people are more interested in participating in the AAC meetings and sharing their feedback, providing, good information that their experiences, their feedback, and bring more information to the table. So I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So what's the
time? Well, the deadline closes and you as staff and whatever committee reviews and interviews these candidates. Will obviously the ultimate decision will be recommendations will be coming from obviously ADAP staff. Will we be allowed to sit on some of these panels so that, just to ask, whatever appropriate prodding questions so that we can, get the best diverse group of people possible who can, because obviously we still have issues with people. For one reason or another, we have the excuse reasons, but just not attending at all or fully participating. And we would like to hopefully this time, bring back that, wonderful talent that we've always had to the committee.
And that's a great question, Paul. I would defer to Mr. Blake on that.
So as we previously hinted at, the AAC will continue to have a role for sure in helping populate your committee. And we're going to lean on your connection to the disability community and your passion for this issue in terms of the advisory and even advocacy side of things in your lives separate from the AAC. I think what I did mention previously is that Metro staff is going to reassert more of a role, that more of its traditional role, whereas one time ADAP staff, access staff kind of just controlled it and we told y'all who the new members would be. Then I came along and we became a little much more hands off and allowed the committee members to help determine or really steer the way as to determining who the new members would be. This round, we're trying to bring more of a balance, not so much laissez-faire on our side, not total control on our side, but more of a balance where we get to hear your input, but also ensure that we have a a good say in the matter as well.
I kind of remember. I'm not remembering things like I used to, but I do remember. Didn't we used to have alternatives, Paul or Pat, that, you know, if who we chose couldn't come, we had alternative members? Does anyone remember that?
Well,
yes, we did have, we did have alternatives that we, you know, people that were backups.
Well, let me clarify in terms of what you mean by alternatives and how we've used alternatives. Now, if you mean alternatives such as how the Metro or the WMATA Board of Directors, where if a board member is not in attendance at a meeting, the alternative from that jurisdiction comes and sits in his or her stead, and I'm not sure if they can vote or not. I know that's changed over time. That's not how we're using alternatives now.
No, that's right. You're correct. Yeah.
Yeah, because what I remembered
is they would rank the candidates, have the ones that they select, they recommended by the board, and if someone can't serve for some reason, mm-hmm. then they already have a list of people who already went through the vetting process for that year that they can quickly ask to replace the candidate if they can't serve. Is that correct, Mr. Blake? I'm here.
That is correct. And if we recall our most recent member, Mr. Thomas Mangrum, that is how his appointment to the board came about. A member of DC resigned from the committee, and Mr. Mangrum had gone through the interview process and the application process previously. He isn't an activist and advocate in the disability community, but he was on our alternative list. And once that vacancy became open, to quickly fill it and have the AAC have as many members as possible up to your constitutionally allowed amount, that's how he was appointed to the AAC through the alternative bump up, if you will.
Okay, now, how many members are on the committee at this time is my question.
So on the books, it's supposed to be 20 total, six from each of the three jurisdictions, plus the two that are recommended by the Council of Governments. But I understand. That's what's on the books. But Mr. Blake can answer what's currently at this time.
Currently, if I'm not mistaken, and Anu has the numbers right in front of her, there are 15 members currently active on the committee.
Really?
That is correct. Yes.
How many are on the phone now?
So is this 15 out of the 18 for each of the six jurisdictions, excluding the two from the council governments?
It includes all 20. It's 15 out of the 20. In both council of governments members, I believe those two positions are filled, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Both positions from the Access for All committee are active members. Mm-hmm.
So basically what we're saying is out of the 18 out of the 18, which are six from each of the jurisdiction, there's only 15 that are active.
No, we're saying there are 20 members total.
Mm-hmm.
There are 20 members total. Two of them are from the Access for All committee. Those two positions are active members. So that leaves 18. And out of the 18, there are 13 who are currently active.
That's what I want to add the math with. Okay, got it.
Okay. Well, okay. So that's why we have five positions open.
Correct. Yes, we've had recent resignations, and then there have been some members who had not been active. So obviously, if there's somebody has not been active, we're not going to seek their repositioning at the AAC, that becomes a vacant position at this time. So I see Tina has his hand up and Philippa has her hand up. Go ahead, please.
I recall that candidates were expected to attend two meetings of the AAC. when would those meetings be held? Before they're appointed or after they become candidates, after they fill out the application?
So, Tino, as somebody is applying, we are encouraging them to listen in to the meetings so that they get a flavor of what the meetings are about. Obviously, each meeting is different in the sense that there are different topics discussed. So there is, every meeting is very unique. Once they have been appointed, it is written in it's they are well aware that they are required to attend the full committee and one subcommittee meeting. That is the requirement and the commitment level. So all the candidates who are applying are have been informed of the requirements, and we are trying to be we're trying to ensure that there is commitment before their appointment.
And you provided the AAC members a matrix which showed attendance. The current members, have they all fulfilled their attendance requirements?
So, yes and no at the same time. And I say that because there have been some members who had situations, whether it's health reasons or other reasons, that prevented them from participating. But because of COVID, and if you recall, Dr. Posner had also mentioned this in previous meetings, that because of health reasons, we are not going to remove somebody from the membership as long as there's some communication. Given that, that's the reason I say that yes and no, because there have been members, most of the members have been regular in their participation. There had been a couple of members who were unable to be active, but they did communicate that and they have become active again. So at this point, I would say that most of the members are active, yes.
Now, those who are active, in terms of the May 13th deadline, do we have to refill applications?
No. So if a member's term is coming for renewal, which is not the case with anyone here except one member, and they are aware, they were approached and they have shown interest in renewing and they have the application and they are aware that May 13th is the deadline for their submission of the application. Anyone who has indicated, there was another member who was up for renewal and they have not indicated whether they are going to be renewing their membership. Therefore, that position has been slotted as vacant. If they give us their application, that would change. However, if they do not, this was the opportunity we could not miss. And we wanted to get all the applications at the same time because, as you probably recall, this is a process, a time-consuming effort of getting members appointed, and we wanted to do all of that in one shot.
In short, the ones who apply are the ones who are going to fill current vacancies.
Correct.
And presumably, there will be more than five, so there might be a choice that could be made amongst, you know.
You mean applications? Yes, there will be more than five applications, yes.
Okay, very good.
Yes. Good. We have five vacant positions, but we already have some applications. We are also in the process of receiving more, and I am quite sure that we would have multiple more applications by the deadline.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, I see other hands, but put me at the end of everybody else. Sorry.
Okay. This is Philippa. I was next. I just had a question about the recruitment process. What is Metro doing anything actively to find these candidates? Or are they just kind of discovering us on their own? Or I was just curious where this pool of new candidates, how they're being attracted to the organization, to the committee, I mean.
Great question. So we do have this information on our website. We also had a news release, which generated quite a bit of interest. And if you recall, as soon as the news release was out, I had sent an email to all the members sharing that news release. Prior to the news release, as soon as we had posted information on our website, if you go to the AAC page, you would see a box with the information about AAC recruitment. And we also have a hyperlink on the AAC page with title AAC membership application. So we are using our media, our website as much as possible. I have also contacted the advisory councils of various counties, trying to spread the information as much as possible. At the same time, if the members have any recommendations, I am more than willing to accept the recommendations of how more to extend the recruitment. But as members, if you have any committees you would like to share the information, please feel free to do so.
Okay, excellent. I applaud your aggressiveness on finding new members. If I might detour for just a second, if an organization is capable of providing the hybrid meetings and due to COVID concerns, someone has an immune compromised system, is that person protected or is the organization obliged to allow hybrid under the ADA? If anyone else there can answer that. Is an immune compromised, in other words, is that a protected class? If you have an issue where you're concerned about catching COVID?
That's a very good question. I think that's one that's probably gonna have to be decided by the Supreme Court at some point. I don't believe that's a protected class at this point, but
okay.
But I'll just say this here, as it relates to the AAC.
I'm not talking about you guys now. Don't get me wrong. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I got you, but I'm just saying, okay. As it relates to the AAC, when you say protected, if you mean you won't be counted as an absence if you're participating remotely, again, we're gonna err on the side of caution for a while. I wouldn't look to, and I know some of this has the decision of the AAC has a role to play in it, but I'm not looking to rush everybody back to our new building for in-person meetings. Let's put it that way. I think we need to be cautious and not feel a need to rush back to in-person meetings in general or mandatory in-person for members at all. I think we're gonna figure out a way, as I mentioned to Paul, we're gonna figure out a way to make it work for everyone involved with safety as our primary motivating factor. But in terms of declaring a new class for disability as it relates to the ADA, that's fair, but I don't think I'm ready to make that proclamation at this point yet.
Oh, no, this was not about Metro, trust me. I know you guys will do everything to do reasonable accommodations, and it was not directed at you, it was a question I had in general.
Okay.
But okay.
Thank you.
You might have to ask your buddy Clarence. we'll let the court.
I heard that.
You heard it.
Thank you, Philippa. Tino, okay. I see your hand.
Our time.
I'm sorry, Ms. Madam Rush.
We're going to have to shut this discussion down because time is going and we have to do public comment.
Thank you. Tino, we can come back to you if you don't mind for a minute. Madam Chair is absolutely right. It is time for our public comments. I just want to state for the record that we did not receive any emails or phone messages for public comments. However, if there are any members of the public connected on this meeting and you would like to make some comments, please come off of mute, state your name and your comment. I would appreciate if you could raise your hands by either pressing *9 if you are on the phone, or by going under reactions and clicking on the hand raise icon. I see Paul Semelford raised his hand and Tina already had his hand up.
Yeah, but that's for the previous discussion, not for public comment.
I recall. Thank you. I would ask for any members of the public, if you have any comments, please let us know now. If not, then we will go back to the previous, then we would continue with the previous segment to finish it off before we continue with our subcommittee reports. Madam Chair, I see no hands up and no chat messages either. Would you like to take Tino's comment and followed by Paul to continue with the previous topic?
Yes.
Okay. Tino, please go ahead.
Yeah, on the previous topic, rightfully, I think it was Darnese who mentioned that immunocompromised individuals should have the right to, it seems to me, meet virtually. But in addition, there is an age category that is high risk as well. And so while immunocompromised people should be accorded the right to attend virtually or in a hybrid fashion, those who are in the high age category, which is high risk, should have the same right.
Okay, thank you. Paul, go ahead, please.
Only last comment with the recruitment process. I know as part of the announcement, and this is probably new in preparation for the Silver Line, y'all are with a new, I guess, addition is looking for someone from Loudoun County. Hopefully y'all actively looking for that perspective, because when it, you know, the Silver Line part two opens up, you definitely need that perspective on the committee. And I know Doris on our committee has alluded to that very loud and clear. And hopefully we are getting candidates that represent that that county. And just wanted to get your feedback. Were you able to get anyone that's from Loudoun County as of yet?
Thank you, Paul. This is Anu. Yes, so that's a great point that you brought up. And yes, we are actively looking for people from Loudoun County, because this would be our opportunity to receive candidates from that county before or even at the time when Silver Line opens up in phase two. So far, we have not received, we have received applications from Reston area, which still is in Fairfax County, however, user of Silver Line. We did receive an interest from a member who is not within the jurisdiction, however, is a user of Silver Line from Reston. And that's the extent at this point. But as I said, that I am continuously contacting the advisory councils of various counties, particularly Loudoun County. I have not had any luck with them as of yet, but I'm hopeful we still have almost 2 weeks. So I'm hopeful that we will receive some applications from Loudoun County residents.
My suggestion maybe would be to, if I remember, they, you know, they have a paratransit portion. Maybe if Mr. Blake or someone in your office knows any, say, hey, we're considering people, anyone, you know, through their paratransit agency can recommend somebody or encourage them to apply. Maybe that might help bring about a person of interest as one avenue. So you have that perspective for one of the, you know, for the open Virginia slots.
Yes. And when I say the advisory councils, it is the paratransit council and the county councils that I've been contacting.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Carol has a hand up.
Thank you, Carol.
Hi, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind the advisory committee members who have volunteered to look at our new bus fare boxes tomorrow at 11, from 11 to 1 in front of the JGB building. Please, please come and look at the new bus fare boxes as we are trying to get your input to make them more accessible. Thank you.
One question, what's the closest metro?
That would be Judiciary Square is the closest. It's about half a block away from that location, and also Gallery Place, which is a block, well, two blocks from that location.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Anu, this is Ms. Rush. How many participants do we have to do that tomorrow?
We have 8 participants, Madam Chair.
Well, thank everybody. That's great.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, let's have a party.
Well,
see you there.
We will see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, Tino. Yes.
Okay. Can we get
lines? There's the where is it? Braddock's Road, isn't the wayfinding testing going on? Members can go out there to, I think it's Braddock Road.
Yes, so, Anu has been coordinating that with some. Anu, could you expand?
Sure. So the Waymap pilot is at Silver Spring Station and Braddock Road Station. Starting today was the beginning of second week. Friday is the last day for this pilot. And some of the members here have already participated in that. If we have time, as Madam Chair had stated earlier, after we finish the subcommittee reports, we would be happy to take any feedback from the members who have already participated. They are alternating days between Silver Spring and Braddock Road. However, there was more interest in Silver Spring Station, so this week it will be more days at Silver Spring Station than Braddock Road.
With respect to Silver Spring, what is the final day for that?
Friday, May 6th.
This coming Friday?
Yes.
So Braddock Road and Silver Spring are running at the same time?
It's been on an alternate day schedule. Today, the testing was done at Silver Spring Station. Tomorrow it will be at Braddock Road. I believe Wednesday and Thursday. May Wednesday, as per the original schedule, will be Silver Spring. Thursday would have been at Braddock Road. However, that day has been moved to Silver Spring because we had more people who were interested in testing at Silver Spring. And Friday by default was Silver Spring anyways. So tomorrow would have been the only day at Braddock Road. Besides tomorrow, rest of the days would be at Silver Spring.
And the time again?
So if anybody is looking to participate, should have informed me because the slides may be full at this point. However, if anybody is still looking to participate, please send me an email at your earliest. And I will see if there are any slots, or if not slots open, if possibly we could double up. We're trying to do whatever it takes to get the most feedback. So I would recommend if anybody is still interested and you have not responded, please send me an email at your earliest.
Okay, Tino, you can give your bus report because we want to stay on schedule.
Okay. Well, let's see. It turns out that our first agenda item last month was on wayfinding. As Anu just mentioned, there's Braddock Road tomorrow and 3 days for Silver Spring. I think Silver Spring is important because that's three levels of bus bays, and that really gets complicated. we also talked about, let's see, the station planning projects was discussed, and then staff and one person from WMATA discussed the Purple Line project. I should mention that this is not part of the minutes, but I should have, during the last meeting, said that our AAC handbook for on rail car design should be shared with the Purple Line folks. And though I didn't say it then, and so it can't be part of the minutes now, but I just want to ask that Anu or somebody, and I can send the PDF if you need it, to share it with one of those folks. Anyway, those were the things that were discussed, and and we'll have a chance again to review this at the bus rail subcommittee, in which we take a vote to approve. So please take a look at it, everyone, the draft, and next week we will go over it again and then vote on approval of the draft minutes.
Okay, Paul?
I'm on. Okay, so last month, as I have the minutes in before me, the draft. So we had a good discussion about the face mask policy, how it was a hot moving button item, and it changed overnight, literally after the meeting, to becoming from mandated to optional. And we discussed some of that today, and we will continue that discussion in depth next month. At the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, we got an update from Mr. Blake about shared rides, and I forgot to, and we've been doing it month by month. As of right now, he has already stated that, you know, the ride share total has been only around hovering a little bit over 5% in the month of March, and in April, it went just up a little bit to past 6%, but that's still very low. And, you know, they're doing that just, you know, keeping safety in mind and everything else. But he does, you know, kind of advises that, you know, as the number of customers are beginning to ride the service more and more, do be aware the ride shares will increase also. And that with the flat fare, we did, of course, right now, we still have the flat fare for Metro Access fares on weekends at $4. And that as of July 1st, there will be, since the board passed its new policies, and Metro Access will benefit from it, if having flat fares on weeknights after 9:30 p.m. on weekdays. A flat fare that we're going to be looking forward to of $4. The other item we discussed was the revival of the focus groups, and we're going to get feedback next month as to when we expect to hopefully see some of those presentations again from the appropriate departments from WMATA. And also, I will add in, I guess I will revise the agenda, adding Denise's concern about the Metro Access Guide. Some discussion about that, since she brought it up in this meeting. I will add that to an amended agenda, which I will send to Anu by early this week, probably tomorrow morning. And with that, I'll take any questions. Any questions? Any additions? Okay, that's it, Denise.
Okay. Do we have someone on the line who has participated in the wayfinding program?
Yes, this is Philippa. I participated today. I found it to be very helpful, but no buts at this point. Just to give you the process, they want you to wear a sturdy belt, or they'll have a belt there for you. They put a clip on it, which holds their phone or their phone, and they program it for it to take you to different locations at the metro. And it was very accurate. First, they have you walk so they can get your gait, or move so they can get the speed at which you move. And then after that, it will tell you in steps or in feet or however you want to know. And I wanted it in steps. So it may say, take 9 steps forward, turn to 3 o'clock position, take 20 steps forward. And they count along with you and so forth. The only trick I found at the Silver Spring Metro is that there is some construction going on up there, and it did not quite clearly tell you how to get around that construction. Now, because I have some vision, I could see to get around the construction, but I was concerned that people with no vision, it might kind of take them directly into the street. And they said they were going to work on that. But I found it extremely helpful. I would definitely use it. I think the trick is going to come in learning how to program it, because they were there to program it for me. I liked it a lot. And they said they're going to also at some point expand it to take you to other venues aside from the metro. For instance, I kept joking about going to Red Lobster, and they were saying that they could program it to walk me over to Red Lobster, but I wasn't doing that. So, okay. Any questions? Yeah.
Anyone else participate already?
I have, but at the first one,
you sent in your report from the first time.
Mention this, Denise? That it's not to be used. It's not for use by people who use wheelchairs. And
okay.
I think that's a problem.
Excuse me. When I went the first time, I was in the wheelchair, so they monitored it by and set it by Albert's pace of walking. But I think with a person with a wheelchair, if I could see, I would have been fine.
Well, they told us last meeting that it wasn't designed for people using wheelchairs. You might be right that, and I remember that you were one of the people who went out to, Crystal City? But yes, I remember you went there, and there was no discussion then that I recall. There was no discussion about not being used by people who use wheelchairs. On the other hand, at our last meeting of the bus rail subcommittee, they said wheelchair users won't be able to take advantage of this.
I wonder why, because they said they could program it for feet, like they could tell you to walk 20 feet, and then it will tell you to turn to 3 o'clock or whatever. So I would think a person in a wheelchair with some vision should probably be able to follow it. I mean, from what I experienced.
If I could see, they would have put the phone on a belt and see how I was rolling it, and I would have felt comfortable. So I'm not quite sure what your statement is, Tino.
I'm just referring to the statement made at the bus rail subcommittee. They said that wheelchair users wouldn't be able to use this wayfinding instrument. I will ask them when I go out to Silver Spring again, but that was clearly said that wheelchair users would not be able to take advantage of this wayfinding app. But I do recall you went out there. I do recall that.
And I recall that they recall that I went out there. Am I correct, Mr. Blake?
Ms. Rush, I think that what they were trying to say is that right now you can't track the rolling speed of your wheelchair automatically. And I asked them about that, and they have said that you can attach a device to your wheelchair that will...
That's what they told me, yeah.
Yes, but what I believe they were saying is that they're not going to have that device at this particular pilot test.
Yes, that's what I'm understanding, that this time they're focusing on something else. But I don't think it's that they can't, the program doesn't work well with a person in a wheelchair.
Yeah, I have asked them about it, and they said that you would need a person that uses a wheelchair independently who wants to use the app, and perhaps it's a person with low vision who uses a wheelchair would probably need to attach a small device that's... onto the wheelchair so that it could track the pace.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I recall. Okay.
Thank you. Madam Chair, this is, I know Barbara Melville has her hand up. She is one of the members who has also participated in this pilot. And I believe she would like to give her feedback. Barbara, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. This is Barbara. I did the pilot on the first day was last Monday. Unlike Philippa, I prefer the feet versus the steps as far as the movement is concerned. And that is because it did not measure it properly in my case. Apparently I was too fast for it. And if I would have listened to it, it actually would have sent me into the tracks from the platform, which is probably not a good thing. So I recommended that they always just, you know, have it permanently set to feet, because your feet is going to be my feet. There's no, that's an absolute measurement as opposed to steps. And people's steps can vary depending on if they're tired, if they're carrying something, et cetera. The clock face, what Philippe was talking about was good. I did prefer... It was initially set up to like give me instructions, like turn left. Instead of turn left, it would say go towards 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, wait a minute. Oh, this is a little confusing because I'm not used to be given that precise, you know, and I was like wondering, okay, I think this is where they want me to go, but maybe not. And so in the end, I preferred them to just change it over to 3, 6, 9, 12, because that would be right angles, which people would normally know. So there was times on the platform, I was at Braddock Road, by the way. At times the GPS type of mechanism would crap out, it would go out of service, and that's not good, I think, because the population we are speaking about using this primarily, they're going to be really depending on it. And, you know, if they're going to have to reboot the thing and hope it works, they're just going to, like, set it aside, quite honestly. It's my opinion, being in the community for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think was happening was it was doing it because they had directed me to a seat in one of the newer platforms on Braddock Road platform. And as you may know, with the renovation, they put covers on the shelters and also clear plexiglass. So my belief was that the metal was causing it, because when we stepped out of there, the issue was not there. There was also issues of, like in my case, the escalator was out of service. I'm not sure why, you know, it looked like it was being repaired, but in any case, I said, well, what? How does someone know that that's out of service? You know, are you going to have an alternate instruction for them to instead go to the elevator? Oh, okay, thank you. That was not thought about, kind of thing. So there was a number of things that we discussed, and I gave possible solutions and they were all favorably received, and it's a worthwhile project, definitely. It's not ready for prime time yet. There was also some discussion about the differences in the culture between UK and the US, and they had to kind of learn a little bit about that. So definitely a work in progress, but if you haven't done it yet and you're planning on it, please speak up and let them know what you would like it to do. They're fairly open on that. So that's my report.
Thank you, Barbara. The project is a work in progress, and they do receive any suggestions well. I've noticed that. And there are going to be things that they're going to, you know, that's why they have people testing it and experiencing it, because different things happen. The out of service, the construction, they probably use the clock because of blind people using the clock, and all of these things, they need to experience it, walk in our shoes. And anybody that can participate, please do. They've had 2 weeks, and they're going to have some more times that they're going to experience it. And I hope that the committee members, and I suggested some blind people and friends, anybody, on the next time, the next go-round, let them experience it, because it's nothing like walking in other people's shoes.
Denise, I would recommend that you have, if possible, some of these slots be available for starting at like 4:30, because doing rush hour is totally different. Because in this case, they were actually holding a Bluetooth speaker so that I could hear it. But if I was listening to my phone, even at the highest volume, I would miss something. And I mean, you got some good people out there, but they're working, you know, like during the earlier hours. So,
okay. Carol, you know that the next time we need to see if we can get better hours, but during rush hour, it would be crazy. There's no way you could hear the instructions. I think rush hour is going to be a problem at any point.
What they were, I guess, relying on is that when you're using your phone, you might have either a Bluetooth connection to an AirPod or something, so you can hear it. Because when they were using the speakers, they were doing it as basically as a demonstration, because you're actually using their phone at this time. But when you're using your own phone, you could use earphone, something connected to your personal phone. That would be a way of preventing the ambient noise to disturb this. Otherwise, you will not be able to hear everything.
Well, right. Maybe people volunteering, that needs to be noted, that you need your own earplugs or something so that you can really hear it. I don't know. Okay. That's something we need to note that we need.
Exactly. That's what I told them too, that if I used it on my phone, I would have an earphone, but only in one ear, so that the other ear helps me hear what else is going on.
Yes.
They were very good about taking notes, so I don't think you have to worry about that.
Okay. So for recommending this test to be in
Rico
Russia,
has a question.
I'm sorry.
This is the interpreter. Rico has a question.
And this is Vanessa. My hands is
Okay.
He's saying, in my situation where I can't use AirPods and I can't use the phone, what would I do?
Okay, Rico, we have a program called Station View that is available on our website. It's fully visual. You can scan the entire station through Station View to get guidance on how to get through. It's fully visual. We will ask that question to Waymap because they are developed right now. They're focusing on people who are blind. So you would probably require to have some sort of a device that tracks your steps as well, so that you can actually see your phone telling you the directions, because there are ways of previewing your path. You right now you can preview your path in the written method. However, if you want to get information real time as somebody who's blind would be getting, you will probably need an additional device.
Okay, Vanessa?
Okay, thank you. So my experience, the day that I went, that particular metro station to me was very, 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 very loud and noisy. The buses were coming in, and it was just so much activity going on. We had to move away to get started at another station. So that was a concern for me, the noise level and how it's going to behave. But other than that, I had a very good experience. This was better than the first time. It did keep going out of service, and he had to reset. So they took notes on that. And me, as a totally blind individual, I don't feel comfortable with it because, you know, it'll tell you to turn left or take X amount of steps. But as I was counting the steps, that count was not equating with what I was doing. So it was a little confusing to me that the count was not more exact. So if I was going by myself, I would really be insecure about that. So, but other than that, I think for someone who has some sight, it is an excellent tool to get around. And it may just be a matter of training, you know, more training, getting more familiar with how the system works. But I think it would be an excellent tool. That's it.
Well, we're at set. Thank you, Vanessa. We are at 7:23.
Madam Chair, this is Anu.
Yes.
The ASL interpreter has.
I'm sorry. Rico is just reporting from the bus, and he's saying, I'm on the bus right now. There's a total of 10 people, and no one is wearing any face mask. And I'm really scared. I'm really scared that no one is using their facial mask.
But they don't have to. And so they decided that they using their option, and as long as Rico has on his mask, he has to be accountable for Rico. And he can't make anybody wear a mask. It's not mandatory. So if he's that scared, then he should not be on public transportation. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
This is Anu, and I just want to share information as far as how any member of the public can submit their public comments. You can write us in an email to metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for attending this meeting. I'm not the chair, but I don't chair the meetings that often, but I hope we made it through okay. And
for all the mothers that are on the committee. Happy Mother's Day. Can I get a motion to close the meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah.
All right.
Holiday.
Been approved.
Happy Mother's Day, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Good meeting. Good job, Denise.
Good job, Denise. Yes.
Thank you. All right.